This is Glow in the Dark Radio. The science fiction podcast with original independent science fiction written and performed by Mike Luoma, with music by Kevin MacLeod, The Vatican Assassin Trilogy, and The Adventures of Alibi Jones by Mike Luoma are available in ebook, trade paperback, and audiobook wherever you find your books online. Get links and details at glowinthedarkradio.com. This is the Science Fiction Podcast, Glow in the Dark Radio. I'm your host, your writer, and your narrator, Mike Luoma. And I've got part 2 of 5 of chapter 13 of Vatican Ambassador coming up on this episode of Glow in the Dark Radio. Yes, this chapter 13 was so long I had to divide it into 5 parts, which are each about 20 minutes, a little bit longer, you know, give or take. So we're into part 2, as BC, our Vatican ambassador, formerly our Vatican assassin, is now on a secret base on the dark side of the moon, with some scientists who say they're part of a secret group called The Project, which grew out of the project to build the Transspace Drive. And he's about to hear more of their story. Dell, one of the scientists, Dr. Dundell, is about to relate the story of the project, as we get into part 2 of chapter 13, A Vatican Ambassador on Glow in the Dark Radio. I want to thank my patrons. If you're a patron, I want to thank you for helping keep the podcast going. Doesn't happen without you. Help me pay my bills on these things. So once again, thank you for signing up for $2, $5, or $10 a month and helping to support the podcast. If you're interested in doing that, you can go to patreon.com. That's P-A-T-R-E-O-N, patreon.com/glowinthedarkradio, and you can sign up. And now they've changed it so you can just become a follower of Glow in the Dark Radio on Patreon if you want to, like, you know, check out what I post and see what's going on with patrons. Again, you can do that at patreon.com/glowinthedarkradio. And a mighty thank you once again to patrons for helping to support the podcast. If money isn't your thing and you want to support the podcast, you can also review the podcast or give us ratings. So always welcoming a good review of Glow in the Dark Radio, wherever you get your podcasts. Throw a couple stars down, or more than that, please. Since 2 usually isn't that good. But yeah, if you have a chance, rate and review the podcast. Rate and review any of my books, because that always helps. And I do appreciate those of you who do. And a reminder before we get into the chapter that you can get a free digital graphic novel, a PDF of Vatican Assassin, the graphic novel. Of course, written and adapted by yours truly. The artwork is by Christian Navarro. Ink and colors are done by Juan Carlos Quatordio. And you can get it for free for a limited time, a limited number for a limited time, at drivethroughcomics.com. In this case, the discount is actually tied to the link, so be sure you follow the link in the show notes to Drive Through Comics to get yourself this free PDF digital graphic novel of Vatican Assassin. Again, a limited number for a limited time. You go to Drive Through Comics with the link, put it in your shopping cart, check out, and you've got a free book. Just be sure you do that before November 1st. Up next, we've got the story behind the project, coming up as Chapter 13 continues with Part 2 of 5 on Glow in the Dark Radio.
Hi, I'm Nukchas, the host of Nutty Bites.
And hi, I'm Tech, Nutty's regular guest.
Or antagonist. Our podcast is like a call-in show where geeks get to debate topics about speculative fiction.
We don't really debate.
Sure we do. We debate topics such as lame superpowers, the best villains, and our favorite apocalypses.
We more like rant, rave, and then have massive nerd rages.
People call in from all over the world, sometimes minor celebrities, and we've even had some supervillains show up.
Do you ever notice that you never have any superheroes or good guys?
I'm a good guy.
Compared to what?
Antagonist. Not really a guest. Nutty Bites. Nimlast.org.
Now here's Vatican Ambassador, Chapter 13, Part 2, on Glow in the Dark Radio.
I joined what would become the Transspace Project when I was 14, Del begins. I joined up with Van Kilner when he was still at Oxford, back in 2060. The project and the Transspace Drive were just concepts back then. It was an exciting time, a thrilling time, Del says, as if reciting a story he's told many times before. Van Kilner seemed like a god to me when I was 14. Del looks off into the distance. He focuses back on BC. Dr. Van Kilner is an amazing man, demanding to work for, but unselfish in his rewards. Del looks at both Anita and Krish before looking back to BC to continue. He'll ask the world of you and expect it, Del muses. But he'll give you the world back in return. I'm proud to have worked for him and with him all of my life. Del smiles. Back at the start, he was a famous academic, which was a rarity back then. Well, I suppose it still is. Anita interrupts to ask BC, how much do you know about the history of Transspace? Why, is this a test? BC laughs. I just don't want Del to have to tell you stuff you already know.
Anita, it's all right. I don't mind, Del says. So long as you don't, he asks BC.
Go ahead, BC urges him on. I have some of that common knowledge I mentioned, but a refresher course won't hurt. Plus, I'm sure they left a lot out when they taught it in school.
Did you know Van Kilner started preliminary work on the Transspace Drive while he was still at Oxford in the 60s?
Del asks BC. BC tries to remember his history, to remember what he does know about Van Kilner and the project. It began at Oxford? BC asks as he tries. Yeah, I kind of remember that. It was a regular company by the time the UTZ took it over, though, wasn't it? Was that in the 80s?
Van Kilner moved the company into the public sector in 2072, Del informs him. That was also when he moved the entire operation here to this base on the moon. The UTZ provided essential capital and other backing for the move, and so the project came under the auspices of the UTZ Council from the time Van Kilner left Oxford, Del explains. But in 2082, with the UIN occupying Mars and the UTZ sending in troops, the UTZ military decided it should take control of the Transspace Project. They stepped in and tried to force Van Kilner to the side. It was a bad year. Van Kilner nearly lost it, almost had a nervous breakdown. We had come so far, Del says, shaking his head. We had a working model by 82. We'd already begun preliminary field testing, he says. Everything was happening so fast. Then this General Johnson arrives to inform us that he's in charge, Del says, a sour look crossing his face. He said Van Kilner must report to him. The general then installed a ranking officer over each manager in the project. Dark days.
Gotta love the military, BC commiserates. Del shudders a little, involuntarily.
Strangely enough, all they really ordered us to do was keep working, to work faster with more intensity, and so we did. But even though the work didn't change, the Federals changed everything.
Federals? BC asks, unfamiliar with the term.
That's what we called our UTZ military bosses, Del explains. They turned our smaller original base here into this more militaristic outpost. They also kept this base off the radar, so to speak, isolated from the general population. And we kept working on the Transspace Drive,
Del says.
But Van Kilner did almost lose it. After seeing him nearly melt down, General Johnson finally gave in.
He didn't want to be responsible for the death of the old man genius. It wouldn't look at all good on the record. Their arrangement was altered. Hans once again was in charge, and the general was now his consultant, Del says with a chuckle. The battles with the UIN on Mars soon took most of the UTZ military's attention. We began to get used to just one question from them. When? They needed us to give them a working, usable transspace drive-equipped ship as soon as possible. They really only wanted the transspace drive for the fast trip to Mars, so they could send more men to Mars more quickly, Del says, shaking his head at the waste of it. They did need our ship. If you remember your history, the Magloop Highway was inconvenient orbit to orbit, but then what? And those bullet ships? Oh, I'd hate to have to ride in one of those things. They were dangerous. Who would want to ride in something called a bullet anyway? He asks. The soldiers used to say they were spamming a can in those bullet ships, Del says with a quick laugh. The military needed us to give them ships that would get their troops to Mars en masse. Besides dangerous, those bullet ships were proving to be too small and too slow for mass troop movements, he tells BC. They only wanted our transspace drive so they could move troops to Mars more efficiently. The military is remarkably short-sighted, Krish interjects. Remarkably, Della pines? I don't think so. Typically would be a better word. I expect the military to be short-sighted, Del sniffs. It may be the nature of what they do that makes them that way, I don't know. Anyway, soon after they put Van Kilner back in charge, they began doing two wonderful things. They left us alone again, and they gave us more money, Del chuckles. Well, the military mostly left us alone, but they could almost taste the transspace ships. They knew we were almost there, too. Our first working transspace ship disappeared during its first test in 82, Del remembers. Lost forever. The second one exploded when we started up the transspace drive, he says and shakes his head. But as the saying goes, the third time was the charm.
I still have no idea why the transspace drive works, BC says. But I thought it had something to do with being able to fold the space just between here and Mars.
That's still most people's assumption, Del agrees. That's what the military assumed, and we never bothered to correct them. We let them assume it was localized, Earth to Mars only. The public went along with the military. But the transspace drives are not limited to Earth-Mars runs. The drive compares two points in space and finds the shortest way between them. It's not really folding space like some have described it. It's more like ignoring space entirely.
Ah, quoting Van Kilner, Chris observes.
That is one of Van Kilner's favorite sayings about transspace, Del concedes. It's not folding space so much as ignoring it entirely. I do like that. The transspace drive pushes its ship down a different path than our linear time-constrained reality.
Sweet, BC says, egging on the geeks. So, why stop at Mars?
Indeed, Del agrees. All we need for the transspace drive to work is a properly identified destination, no matter where that destination is. We just need a complete set of coordinates, Del explains. We can use the transspace drive to ignore space between almost any two points. There are limitations. We can't use the drive too close to any gravity well, so most of our ship's engines and fuel are dedicated to getting the ship up and out to a place where the transspace drive can be used, a safe point. That takes longer than the trip through transspace does, Del says, chuckling again. We need a complete set of coordinates to create a safe point to go to, and that can be a challenge. We went to Mars the old-fashioned way and jumped back here the first time, because we had a safe point well mapped out on this end of things. A few runs to Mars, we worked out the kinks, and it was smooth sailing from there. We could get to Mars and back effortlessly after just a few tries, Del says.
We gave that tech to the military, and then they left us alone, Krish starts to explain.
Del just looks at him. Krish stops.
Not exactly. Del corrects him. They left us alone only after we built them actual warships, Del explains. They had us create the assembly lines to crank out transspace transports, the first UTZ transspace ships, designed to carry 500 men between Earth and Mars, and to act as their support platform while those men were on Mars fighting. They were all space inside and all armament outside, missiles, lasers, and machine guns all over the exterior. Nasty.
I'll say, says Krish. One of the best stories is the one about how the first five ships off the assembly line took a bite out of the UIN mobile base on their test run. Did you know there were only scientists and test pilots on those ships when they eliminated the invisible mobile UIN base? Krish asks BC.
I don't know the story, I don't think, BC says. Del gets back into it.
The UIN thought they could attack the Transbase Project shipyard base out in Earth orbit, hit the assembly works and shipyard before the ships were staffed by the military and ready to fight. They did not reckon on the resolve of a group of crazy test pilots and scientists functioning as the ship's ersatz crews. We challenged those assumptions for them. They suffered our consequences.
Del allows himself a pause of triumph and a thin smile before he goes on.
That was the first time the UIN's mobile stealth base was revealed, he tells BC. We knew they had some kind of flying fortress that was evading most UTZ sensors. It had been attacking UTZ targets fairly easily. Our ships were the first real challenge that base faced. And I was on one of those ships, Del says, smiling with pride.
Really? BC asks. That's something.
Really? Del affirms. We were testing the first five ships off the assembly line when the UIN stealth base attacked us out of nowhere. The ships were crewed by the test pilots and scientists, and we kicked their ass, Del asserts with a smile.
Del likes to remind us every now and then that he's a war hero, Anita kids a little.
He's our hero, Krish adds, voice dripping sarcasm.
Del looks down his nose at Krish and arches an eyebrow. Krish looks down nervously.
Well, actually you are, Krish says sheepishly. Our hero, I mean. Sorry.
Del is rightly proud of his feats, Anita says in his defense. As he should be.
My only regret is that we didn't destroy the base entirely, Del admits. It escaped us. But we did do serious damage, and we proved that it actually existed, and that it could be stopped, or at least turned back. And we stopped them from destroying our assembly plant. They did some damage, but nowhere near as much as they could have. We could repair the damage. We did, and we kept going. We continued cranking out ships for the UTZ military from this base, and the UIN mobile base didn't attack us again.
And suddenly Mars was much closer for the UTZ, Chris says in a loud, exaggerated announcer's voice.
Yes, Del agrees, and plows on, mostly ignoring Krish. The UTZ military were ecstatic. We set up the plant, protected it, and then made sure it could run itself. And then we handed it over to the UTZ military to run it for themselves. They could make as many Earth-Mars transspace ships as their heart desired. And then they left us alone, finally, so we could do what we wanted.
And what did you want to do? BC asks.
We wanted to keep going, Chris exclaims. Why stop at Mars?
Shut up, Gandhi, BC jokes, using Anita's earlier appellation. Chris gives him a dirty look.
She, Chris says, nodding at Anita, can call me that. You cannot, he says, reprimanding BC. You haven't earned the right to, not yet. I know she means well. You I still don't know about, so watch out.
BC laughs. Ooh, I'm scared, he says with sarcasm. Sorry, he adds more seriously.
Shut up, Gandhi, Anita says. She looks from Krish to BC and laughs.
Del sighs and everyone quiets back down so he can continue.
We did want to keep going, he says, and so we did. We gave the UTZ military the shipyard in orbit and kept this moon base ourselves. The UTZ left us alone and kept us funded to keep a pool of skilled engineers handy, in case things broke down on one of their ships or at the shipyard, which they usually did not, he says with an I'll-have-you-know nod. But we were left alone for the most part.
I joined up around then, Chris says. That was around 85, right? He asks Del.
Yes, Del nods in agreement.
It was the perfect time to join, Chris says. He looks over at Del.
Go ahead,
Del tells him, answering Chris's unspoken question.
The cool thing about the project, Krish says, is that even though it was a UTZ thing, it wasn't exclusively Christian. It wasn't religious at all. I could join the project without worrying about not fitting in, because I'm Hindu, you know? Well, I was back then. I'm not anything now, he says.
Anita cuts him off. You know, Krish, Father Campion here, she nods at BC, is a Christian priest. Be careful what you say.
Are you easily offended, Father?
Krish asks BC. Not really, BC decides.
Good. You can't be easily offended if you're a Hindu these days, let me tell you. Gotta live on the moon to escape your friend's persecution, he says to BC accusingly. Nice, huh, in this day and age. Anyway, as a Hindu intellectual, all I had was the moon.
You were never, Anita butts in.
Never what, Hindu?
Krish asks. He protests.
No, I was back then.
No, an intellectual, Anita says with a grin, cutting him off and cutting him down at the same time. Krish clams up and looks hurt for a moment, Then he smiles and continues as if she hadn't said anything. And the project recruited me. It was as if the universe had opened up to me.
Very poetic, says Dell. We had begun building our own transspace ships around the time Krish was recruited, in 85. Once the military had theirs, we could make our own. We brought in Krish and some other fresh blood. Our new brains, we called them.
Dell grins evilly at Krish.
Whatever did happen to your brain, Krish?
Krish laughs a fake laugh. Ha ha!
With the UTZ military out of the picture, mostly, we could bring on more NCs, as the Federals used to call them.
Dell interjects to explain. NCs? BC asks him.
Non-Christians.
Dell and Krish say in unison. Oh, BC says quietly, then he grins. That was cute. Do you guys do that a lot? Both of them glare at BC until they crack smiles a second later. NC. Non-Christian. How nice. I'm BC. Bad Christian. Don't let the collar fool you. When did you join up? BC asks Anita. In 96. Later. After a couple of other important things happen, she answers. She gets up and walks over behind Krish. Don't jump ahead, she chides BC. She looks down at Krish and then over to Dell. Let them tell the story. I'll chime in when my time comes, don't you worry, she tells BC. Actually, I do want to interrupt for a sec. Are you guys hungry? Funny, I was, but then I hadn't thought about it again. Lost track of time, but...
Sure, I'm starving, BC says. Dell shakes his head. No, I'm not that hungry. But why don't you eat in here, and I'll keep debriefing Father Campion while you eat. If that's okay with you, Father, he asks BC.
Sure, and please call me BC, okay? He answers. I've never been much of a father figure, BC jokes. What, killing people get in the way of that? Anita asks pointedly. BC glares at her. Low blow, bitch. Don't care if it's true. Where did that come from? What? She asks, quasi-innocently. We know what you are. Who you've killed. You're a soldier. And to think we've been having so much fun, after all the shooting and all the puking was done. BC feels the need to defend himself. Look, BC states, I did my job. I worked for the Pope, and according to him, I did the Lord's work. Yet again, the number one excuse for bloodshed over the course of human history, Anita says with a note of anger in her voice. I congratulate you on your sense of history, if not your morality, or lack thereof, she finishes. She walks around the table, stands beside BC, and looks down on him in his chair. It's why we're still in this war now, isn't it? Just people like you, doing your job. Oh, I get it, BC goes on the defensive. I didn't know that when you asked if I was hungry that you planned to serve me humble pie for lunch. Is that it? Yum, yum, yum. Isn't it good? Wasn't I bad? BC lays on the sarcasm. Jesus Christ, give me a break. What, is that a prayer? Are you praying now? Anita says. She can't keep her face composed after that. She laughs.
Some people, Krish interrupts. Some people get very cranky when they're hungry, he notes.
Krish is right, Anita agrees. Let's eat something. BC? What? Simple as that, move on, I guess. What do you want? She asks. Anything? Anything, Anita prods him. Go ahead, you'll be surprised. How about tuna salad, a tuna salad sandwich? Anita nods. Krish, will you go get that in my usual? Me? Krish protests. Why am I the waiter all of a sudden? Because BC and Dell need to stay here to tell and listen to the story. And I need to stay to keep BC in line, she says with sarcasm. Oh, she does, BC echoes her sentiment. Right, Krish sighs. Besides, you know the way there, Anita says. It was so nice of you to volunteer, Krish. She smiles up at him. Bah, Krish says, standing up. I'm going. Are you sure all you want is a tuna sandwich? Well, since you're asking, BC pauses, let's push him a little. How about a salad and a cola, too? Oh, and creamy Italian dressing on the salad, but on the side, okay, not on top. I don't want it to get soggy. I hate that, BC says, sounding faux finicky. And croutons. Don't forget croutons. Make sure they're crispy, not stale. Do you have garlic ones? Oh, I love those. And could you make sure the cola isn't too syrupy?
Ah!
Krish loses it. BC smiles. So does Dell.
That was good.
Dell nods to BC. Krish leaves the room, cursing under his breath. I'll be back shortly, his voice echoes as he hits the hallway. Sometimes it's at his expense, but Krish is usually good about being our comic relief, Anita confides to BC conspiratorially. I'm sorry things got hot there for a second. I was actually trying to make a joke. I don't joke about killing people, BC says, without humor. I don't joke about them, do I? Have I? Huh, okay, maybe I have a couple of times. It is war, she admits. People get killed on both sides. We've all done what we've had to do, she says.
Wonder what she's done.
I can see how that could have sounded like a cheap shot, she admits. And I'm sorry about that, okay? Anita checks with him. Apology accepted, BC says.
You know, she is kind of pretty in an unconventional way. Like a mischievous angel, when a light hits her right. And when she isn't trying to kill you. Or give you shit over what you do. Funny, any woman looks good when she's apologizing to you. Happens so rarely.
Look, don't gloat, okay? She admonishes BC. And don't get used to it.
Shall I go on? Del asks, stoic and reserved.
BC and Anita look at each other and laugh. Please, BC says. He shifts in his seat, settling in for more of Del's story. Anita sits back down in her seat as well, and the tall man begins again.
We in the project built our own ships, and we didn't stop at Mars, Del says. The asteroids were the next logical step. We hoped to find a large enough, stable enough rock to build a base on, with new materials we could use to build more ships well beyond the reach of either side of the war. We'd be left entirely to ourselves, Del explains. Van Kilner wanted to go to the asteroids to live in lower gravity. Gravity was punishing him as he got older. That was one reason. The monetary support from the UTZ was beginning to dry up, too. Each year's budget slightly smaller. Van Kilner figured the asteroids' resources would free us from the UTZ's budget control. Give us the means to build transspace ships to jump beyond the solar system, Del says. That was Van Kilner's dream, to go to the stars themselves beyond our own system. He could see that wouldn't happen with the war going on, not if we tried to survive just on the UTZ scraps. Del shakes his head. We moved everyone out to the project's first asteroid base in mid-92. The base was fully functional by then. We kept a small staff here, he says, looking around the room and the base around their conference room. But all our meaningful work moved out to the asteroid base. This place has been like this, he indicates the emptiness, ever since. Mostly used now as a base for covert ops, Del says, nodding to Anita. Those ships we built for ourselves to take us to the asteroids were spotted by some commercial pilots. They called our ships flashers, pretty much from the start. So we called them that, too. Van Kilner doesn't like the name. He says it's undignified, and reminds him of fat naked men in long trench coats. Del laughs.
BC's all about flashers, Anita jokes.
We were jumping back and forth all the time, so it was inevitable that some of our ships would be seen. A few were that first year, Del explains. He gets back to his story. It was after we had spent a year out in the asteroids that we found the other base. The alien base, Del says.
I wondered when we were getting to that, BC chimes in.
We found an abandoned base, left years ago by some alien race. They left behind parts. Ship parts, fusion reactors, fusion drives. We hit the jackpot.
Del can't help but smile.
We began reverse engineering what we found.
Del leans in towards BC.
We had a working shipboard fusion reactor by the end of 93. We moved into their base in 94, and we kept making new discoveries. But somehow our activity had, unknown to us, set off some sensors, some silent security alarm of some kind. That, and it turned out that our jumps between Earth and the asteroids had not gone unnoticed. Someone discovered us. We drew attention. Alien attention.
The original residents came back, huh? BC asks.
They came back, Del nods.
Who were they? BC asks him.
They're the ones we call the Domo, Del says.
We call them a lot of things, Anita mumbles under her breath, loud enough so BC will hear her.
They are...
Del hesitates.
They're not all you would hope for in an alien race, Del says.
They're greedy, nasty, blood-sucking, fat little bastards, Anita says. Oh, yeah, you mentioned them before, is all BC can say.
They're okay, Del says, as long as you don't mind dealing with vampires.
Okay, BC shakes his head. You know, he laughs nervously. I thought for a second there you said vampires. He lets out another nervous chuckle.
I did say vampires,
Del tells him. Damn, BC can't help shaking his head again. I was hoping I was having a flashback or something. Anita cuts in. We don't have any proof, but we think Domo invaders on Earth in the 17th century may have been the basis for the old legends of vampires. Really? Did they suck your blood or something, do they? BC asks. We've never caught them in the act, Anita admits.
But there have been strange,
Del pauses, looking for the right word.
Casualties, when they're around. A few people just die. Their life force just sucked out of them, he says quietly. They seem to pass quietly in their sleep.
Not too scientific there, Doctor, Anita admonishes Del.
That was Vatican Ambassador, Chapter 13, Part 2. Alien vampires? Von Kilner, the Domo, who may have been vampires? An asteroid base? Bases? BC's been learning a great deal about the project, from Transpace to well beyond Mars. Sorry it's a bit heavy on exposition, but we'll break it up a little and learn a little bit more about more aliens on our next episode with Part 3 of 5 of Vatican Ambassador coming up on Glow in the Dark Radio. Reminder, you can get a free digital graphic novel, a PDF of Vatican Assassin, the graphic novel, limited number for a limited time. Just follow the link to Drive-Through Comics in the show notes. A reminder to please review stuff if you have a chance. Review the podcast, leave some ratings, or review any books. Always welcome, and it helps a great deal. And speaking of helping a great deal, thank you again to everybody who is a patron that helps keep this podcast going. And people come and go as patrons as they can, so if you are interested in joining us and helping out supporting the podcast, you can do so at patreon.com/glowinthedarkradio. And I'm happy to have you, please. That is all for this week. We'll be getting into Part 3 of Chapter 13 on our next episode of Glow in the Dark Radio. I'm your host, your writer and reader, Mike Luoma. Thank you again for listening to Glow in the Dark Radio.
Glow in the Dark Radio.
This podcast presentation is copyright 2023 by Michael F. Luoma and is protected under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives, 4.0 International License, CC by NCND 4.0. Music by Kevin MacLeod. You can find his work at Incompetech.com. Mike's books are available in ebook, paperback, and audiobook wherever you find books online. Get links and more details at glowinthedarkradio.com and mikeluoma.com. This has been a presentation of Glow in the Dark Radio.